Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is the 18th of January, 2013. Sorry, I'm a little snotty. And I don't mean attitude-wise, I mean nasal-wise. Got a little bit of a something in my face. I don't know what it is. I hope you can just bear with this voice for a minute while I introduce the show. Actually, this was a show that I originally intended as a kind of bonus show. So it's a little bit of a looser show. It's Corey and me, and we talk about, you know, the month since the shooting in Connecticut, and we focus a lot on the social media aspect. That's actually how our conversation starts. Well, I recently did an interview on a show called Two Beers with Steve. Some of you might have heard Stefan Molyneux interviewed on that show before. In fact, that's how I first heard about it. Great interview show that I highly recommend you check out. Steve and his co-host Chris do a great job. They have a wide range of guests. So we got into this kind of after show eventually where we were talking about technology and we were talking a little bit about the advantages that kids have today. And one of the things that we discussed in this show, one of the reasons why I wanted to put this show with me and Corey into the record, is social media being used to go through the same traumas that people can experience watching, you know, Fox News or MSNBC. And it can be so much more than that. And I think there's a lot of people who are doing a great job with it. I've tried to be less negative as far as my presence on something like Facebook is concerned. So I hope you find this conversation valuable. There's a lot of other stuff coming soon that I'm currently working on. So thanks for listening and take care. This was recorded about a week ago. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today is January 11th, 2013. I'm sitting here with Corey.
Hello.
Hey, Corey. What's happening? And we are not live. This is not any kind of a live show. Corey and I were just kind of sitting here at a table together, staring at each other quietly. And I said, do you want to turn on these microphones and do a podcast?
The mixer is already right here.
Yeah. I know we wanted to talk about some Facebook interactions that you've had on an issue that we've talked about before a little bit.
And it wasn't just that this was posted. It's just that four separate people posted something exactly like this on the same day within about an hour of each other. And in each case, it was somebody who was a vocal gun rights supporter having been murdered. And every one of these articles that was posted by someone who I know is a pretty liberal person. And everyone had a comment under it from one of those people's friends that were basically along the lines of, I guess having a gun didn't protect you so well after all.
Yes.
And I think that is disgusting.
I'm sure.
I'm not alone in that, right? I don't think that's weird. Maybe it's weird that I kind of blew up about it the way that I did. But it kind of makes me nauseous that, you know, people are going to not only capitalize on a, you know, capitalize on a tragedy to try to make a political point, but to do it in a way that highlights that, you know, this person deserves to be laughed at for their beliefs and also the fact that they got murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I was called out by one of the people after I said, my first comment was along the lines of, well, there is no one more smug than someone who's posting about the death of someone they disagree with.
Sure.
And I was called out for being too serious.
Mm-hmm.
This person said that if you can't see the ironic comedy value in this guy's death, then I can't help you, which is okay because I didn't want this person's help. But he also said that life is too serious for me. The worst thing is, I don't think any of these people actually read the articles. They read the headlines and assumed they knew enough.
Mm-hmm.
But in one of those cases, it was the case of, I don't know if you might have remembered that in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, about 3.5 years ago, it was actually on September 11th, 2008, a woman who had an open carry license carried a firearm to her daughter's soccer game and made national headlines, gun-toting soccer mom.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody was like, oh gosh, there's a gun. I'm not comfortable with that. And then, I mean, this is an awful story in and of itself, because there was such an outcry from the community, the county sheriff decided to revoke her open carry license for no legal reason. And she sued and got her license back.
Right.
So because of this event that happened 3 years ago where she open carried in public and people made a big stink about it, it's ironic that she was murdered with a gun. And it's funny and she got what she deserves. But the truth is, and people are spinning this into an argument in favor of stricter gun control laws. But the fact of the matter is that the person who murdered her was not only her husband, he was a law enforcement officer. So this is a case where stricter gun control laws would have meant nothing. So I don't know if it was his police-issued Glock that he killed her with or one of the others, but they did mention that her gun was in her backpack by the front door.
Yeah.
So it wasn't her gun. And this whole thing was witnessed on a webcam. She was talking to someone on a webcam when he shot her.
Right. And do they know the motive or anything like that?
No, he killed himself immediately after. But he did have a history of spousal abuse, which also, I think, brings up a much more important point in the case. Is that how does a guy with a history of spousal abuse get to continue being a law enforcement officer and be required to have a gun?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's kind of also, unfortunately, in many cases, that kind of person is above this debate. You know, I think what you're talking about here, the bigger picture is, I talked about this on a live show. I never released it as a podcast because I wound up scrapping it. I wasn't really happy with it. But this is the sort of political social media victory lap.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right.
This says a lot about politics. And I was very critical after this Newtown, Connecticut shooting of people who are supposedly like-minded. And that includes people who I would call, you know, philosophical peers, but also media producers. Mm. In fact, somebody sent me an email just a day. It might have even been the same day as Newtown. And they said, you should make some memes about this. Like, you should really cash in. You should really capitalize on this to spread the message about your show. And what I said was, well, I probably wouldn't do that because I'm not the Westboro Baptist Church, right? That's not really my style. That's not a classy move.
Yeah, no.
And it was just the circumstances that I was in. I was driving in my car, actually, back from, you know, this part of the state to the seacoast. So I had about an hour to myself. And I heard the news on the radio. And then I just turned the radio off and kind of sat there and thought about it. And had I been sitting in front of my computer and sitting someplace where I had access to a television, so I could immediately jump into that whole frenzy,
right,
of blaming and shaming, gloating, or whatever people were doing. And it wasn't everybody. I don't even know if it was most people, but if it's like three people that I'm friends with who I have connections through the Free State Project or through similar political or philosophical interests, and then, you know, three friends who are just like Facebook friends. Hey, remember when we used to pass each other in the hall in 1994 in high school? Do you want to be Facebook friends?
Kind of friends.
So I there was one of my friends from college who posted something, and he said, it's simple. It was a very clear declaration. It's simple.
It's simple.
Guns so, equals all, deaths.
Yeah.
No guns equals no deaths. And my fingers went right to the keyboard, right?
Right.
Said, and just this voice in my head, this, you know, this jackal on my shoulder was like, get him. Get him. And 60 acerbic and witty comments go through my head just very quickly, one after the other. But I didn't act on that. But I could see how easy. I mean, I felt like I had this advantage of just an hour to myself to think about it and reflect on how I was feeling about it before I sat down in front of the computer and started seeing everything that was going on. I think if I just reacted, then I would have been more likely to jump into that.
Right. Sometimes it's a bad idea to be sitting at your keyboard when you discover something like that. Because you're going to just dive in and say something and get yourself in a quagmire that you really would rather not be in.
Mm.
Because a couple exchanges after that, the guy accused me of not being capable of civil discourse, which is pretty funny to get a lesson on civil discourse from somebody who thinks murder is funny.
Yeah.
A murder of a real human being. You know, watching a fictional murder of a fictional character certainly has been played for laughs in a lot of TV shows and movies, but no one actually dies. Ever since the Newtown shooting, you know, the question has always been, well, what do we do about all these guns? Like, very rarely is anyone saying, what do we do with all these crazy people? And I do see examples of it. There are people out there who are trying to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not being met with any kind of interest or response. But if you post about how funny it is that someone who supports gun ownership was murdered, then you get a million replies.
Yeah.
And a lot of likes.
Mental health is not sexy like guns are.
No.
You know? And acknowledging, you know, gosh, I hate to get on Alex Jones's side here, but in his hysteria the other day on television on the Piers Morgan show,
we talked about suicide pills,
yeah,
mass murder pills, yeah.
And when you're calling something a suicide pill or a mass murder pill, it has like a real tinfoil hat kind of sound.
It really
to it,
does
that people are being given mass murder pills. But there is some validity to what he was saying. That's one of the most unfortunate things about Alex Jones. Yep. Is
behind his – I mean, and you just recently did a show all about Alex Jones. So I don't want to – you know, but It's quite right to say that he's got some good points to make and a lot of really good information screened in there. I mean, the signal-to-noise ratio is fairly high.
This was something that we talked about before. I mentioned this in the last show that I just did with Tony Myers. I used to think that the problem was the disconnect that I was having with a lot of people is they just don't have the information.
Yeah.
If I just can get them the information. And what I found was in a lot of cases, and you know, I'm not saying that there weren't times in my life that I wasn't immune to this as well. The more information I had, the more offensive I became to them. And what I realized is it's not their fault. These are not stupid people. They always had their pants on forwards.
They had their pants in the proper part of their body, not on their head.
Yep. And learning from life experiences, but it was just this one area where they were unreachable through any intellectual means. What I realized was it wasn't a problem with them. This is an arena that is purely emotional and really thrives on fear and paranoia and blame and hatred and almost like this traumatic acting out of wanting bad things to happen to people that you've decided you don't like for some reason that you really don't understand. And it's an outlet. I don't think it's a good outlet, but maybe that's something that people need. It's not a panacea for, you know, childhood trauma or undealt with trauma or whatever it is. I'm saying it's something that I hope changes, but from what I watched just in preparation for that Alex Jones show, there isn't any kind of meaningful discussion going on because I don't think that's what this is about.
Yeah, I know. You're absolutely correct. Well, I do understand. I was going to say I don't understand how people could not see what the more likely successful approach would be, which would be figuring out not what's with all the guns, but what would make a person want to go into a school and shoot a bunch of kids in the first place. That is something I have not heard discussed. And I've been doing some fairly extensive reading on it. There's very little in the way of discussion about why he did it. And I'm shocked because usually there's a lot of hand-wringing over how did this happen? Why did this happen? Who was this kid?
Well, it appears what happened, and we both kind of checked for news stories on this event almost a month ago, basically got what I guess I could call 9/11.
Yeah.
Right. So immediately afterwards, the search for motives, the exploration, the call for introspection stops, and all of the focus becomes geared towards how do we prevent it from happening again.
Right.
But for some strange reason, we can't have any discussion, and this is just what I'm gathering from Google News or where the media are focusing now. We can't have any discussion about how it happened the last time. All the discussion has to be about how can it not happen again.
Right.
Go ahead.
And I think it just dawned on me that probably the reason there's no discussion as to how to prevent this from happening again is because the thing has been taken over by the people who think they know how to stop this from happening again, i.e. no more guns, and the people who oppose that idea.
Mm.
And it's a very difficult position to be someone who's in favor of gun rights in a situation like this because there's always the old, well, you want children to get murdered then.
Well, it's because people could say this has become politicized, but it's become infotainmentized,
right,
pretty much, where I had to watch a lot of Piers Morgan for the last show I did. It wasn't easy, let me tell you. Piers Morgan is a hack tabloid journalist who has risen to like the forefront of this issue. He's certainly, you know, when we talk about opportunism, Piers Morgan is certainly taking advantage of this tragedy in a big way. But I only really feel comfortable being critical of what I saw from like-minded people based on what my initial impulses were, you know. And I think the only thing that maybe stopped me from acting on some of those impulses was the time I had to reflect on it quietly by myself. And instead of like what you said, if you're in front of the computer, you know, something is going to happen.
Right.
There is a simple dichotomy, I think, for making sense out of these events, and there are events to practice this with every day, I guess, but it's really the reacting versus responding. And reacting is very knee-jerk. It's the mainstream media, it's social media, it's culture, it's politics.
The deck is really stacked against most of us.
Yeah.
In terms of the information we're given, the conclusions that are drawn for us, you know, the conclusion has already been drawn that it's to do with guns. And it seems like the debate is over, like, how much more control over gun ownership are we going to give away?
Yeah. And that's what I mean by it got 9/11.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So now everybody, after this happens, everybody needs to be treated like Adam Lanza.
Right.
But no examination. And I'm really disappointed. And even still, even though I should know better by now, I'm a little surprised that there's so little follow-up on motives.
And when there's no discussion about motives or anything, there's really not any discussion.
Mm-hmm.
From everything I've read about this is just every news story I see is just more details about what specifically happened on that day. Like a firsthand account from a six-year-old girl who watched her entire class get murdered in front of her and escaped by playing dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not really adding to the dialogue.
Right.
I mean, it's horrible. It's the worst kind of tragedy, but it's really, I mean, at this point, they're really just, you know, uncovering more details about the specifics of what happened during the shooting in case you forgot that you feel bad about this.
Right.
They paint a very, very vivid, detailed picture of what it was like to go through that as a six-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent watching your kid run out of the school covered in blood. And that's not adding to the discussion. And when there's no discussion, people forget to think critically, I think. I mean, people are not – we're not all good at that. You know, there are a number of everyday misconceptions and cognitive biases that we all have that make it difficult for us to really think critically. And it's even harder when there's nothing – when it's presented to you as if there's nothing to think about.
But never forget – right? Isn't that a cry that's so common? Never forget the emotional terror that you felt in that moment. So keep reliving that initial moment and always make your decisions and always accept decisions about what should be done, grounded in that, the best you can be grounded in that emotional terror that you felt initially. So if you're there, if you're stuck there, and if the coverage of this event in the mainstream media is sticking you there, then you're never going to be able to think critically about it.
Right.
I mean, the two don't go together. Yeah. And I think that all decent people felt bad about this.
Yeah.
And when we feel bad, and this is what I was thinking, and this was just based on my observations and again my initial impulses as far as how to deal with the situation once I did get in front of a television or I did get in front of my computer. When we feel bad, obviously the number one need that we have is to feel good. Simply put, very in general terms, I've found in my experience, I take a lot of can take shortcuts, you know, to feeling good. And one quick way to feel good is to feel right.
Right.
You know, or to feel justified or to feel vindicated. So I think when we talk about these political victory laps, this gloating in social media, that is an attempt to feel better through feeling right, through that I told you so moment. And people, that's one of the reasons why I think so people are so resistant to new information or other sides of the debates, because if you spend a tremendous amount of time shielding yourself from the details and nuances of an issue or an event, it gets very easy to pretend that you understand it completely.
Right.
And, you know, when it comes to liberty-minded people, I mentioned in a show recently, I spent a lot of time, I felt like, waiting for this I told you so moment to happen. Like, oh, when this happens, everyone will come to me and they'll say, gosh, Brett, if we'd only listen to you. And I don't know what that fantasy is about. I certainly don't have it anymore. But I remember being new to these ideas. And I remember feeling that. And Stefan Molyneux said in his video presentation about economics that he did the other day, he said, you know, the tough thing about being a libertarian is you always have to say you're sorry for being right. You know, like, I told you so. I'm sorry that happened to you, but I told you. And that might be generally true. That moment, if you're waiting for some kind of positive development, like if you're posting on Facebook, even if you're not going about it in the most sincere or the most constructive way, what you're showing is that you want some good to come out of this.
Right.
And if you're in the channels through which something good is going to come is what? The government, the media, society. Stop holding your breath. I mean, there's no positive development that's going to come from this. So this story might never make sense.
No.
And it seems like the people who are tasked with helping complex events be comprehensible really aren't interested in following up or you know, piecing this together or even really creating a coherent timeline. I feel bad for people who are holding their breath for this positive, productive development. You know, are we going to talk about medication now? You know, are we going to talk about mental illness now? Are we in a society of voters where so many people are on antidepressants? Every one of these news networks is sponsored by pharmaceutical companies. Kids are kept compliant in school through these drugs. Campaigns are funded by these. Are we going to have a discussion about what Alex Jones called suicide mass murder pills?
No, because they still make money.
Well, there's that, and then it's just too entrenched.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. As long as those pills are still making money, and part of that money is being handed over to politicians, there's never going to be a meaningful discussion about it.
Yeah, and there's never going to be – I think that it would be an incredibly frustrating thing to try and make sense of this or try to wait for whatever positive outcome you think is going to come of this. So really what I thought about in the last few weeks is certainly plenty of people are trying to use this as an opportunity for themselves, right? Politically, whatever. And that doesn't make any sense to me either. And I think that that was where our conversation started, that you thought this was pretty shameful. Mm. But, you know, in crisis – there is opportunity. That's something that Rahm Emanuel said. When you hear a politician say it, when you hear a powerful person say it, yeah, it's really scary. Mm-hmm. But there might be an opportunity for individuals to learn something through how they react to a crisis. Mm-hmm. When these things happen, like I said, the immediate response is to feel bad, and the immediate need is to feel good.
Right.
Right. So what people want, or what? Let me not say what people want. What I wanted. When something like this happens, because I remember driving and being sad about it, but then being fearful. Why did this happen? This doesn't make any sense. How could somebody, no matter how could somebody, like you never hear about anything happening like this, people going into a school and shooting first graders. I mean, for me, hearing about it, it was as impactful to me, for whatever reason, as 9/11. You know, but 9/11 could immediately be organized, depending on who you were, into some kind of context that allowed you to make sense of that event. So one, they hate us for our freedom. Right. If you're particularly thoughtless, they hate us for our freedom, and it's because the gays are getting married. If you're a little bit more thoughtful about it, maybe this is blowback. I think that the blowback theory is just as reasonable as most conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. and then there's some pretty far-out conspiracy theories about right. it. But there was a buffet of ways to make sense out of that event, but it didn't, for me in that moment, there was no way to get clarity and understanding that I felt like I really needed. So that was particularly troubling. And like what I said, what I looked for was a shortcut
right.
to understanding. And this is aided when somebody emails me and says, oh, Brett, this story is goldmine. It's got, you know, gun-free schools, got people probably on medication, mental illness, a troubled family. You know, it's got all these aspects of all these things. Like you could have, from just the things you've talked about on the show before, you could have written a script mm-hmm. for an event like this. And you should use it to promote getting kids out of government schools. You could very easily trick yourself into thinking that, oh, well, I can make sense of this. And it seems like that was what everybody was doing without pause. It's too much guns. It's not enough guns. It's, you know, not enough gun regulation, too much gun regulation. Everybody quickly had an answer. But I had to sit there myself, you know, by myself for an hour with no answer. And I think that that's something that I benefited from is that discomfort. And to think about what you need, to not be able to have some immediate patch.
Right.
Right. That Facebook can provide or that the mainstream media can provide. Because it seems like no matter what happens, 9/11, for example, incredibly complex event. The mainstream media had a patch for that knowledge gap.
Right.
For that wound in 2 hours. Osama bin Laden.
Yeah. And you know, those first 2 hours were pretty awful.
Mm.
Like those first 2 hours before, like, you know, what happened and how and who did it. Those first couple hours were really scary.
Yeah.
Because first you heard about – I was actually – I remember I woke up late that day and I was rushing to work and I was driving to work. And that's when I heard about the guy – when I turned on the radio, the guy, it was a New York – I was living in New Jersey at the time. So it was a New York radio station. The guys were broadcasting out of the Empire State Building. And they were talking about, holy crap, a plane just hit the World Trade Center. And at the time, it was described as like a small, like, prop plane and something accidental. And while they were discussing the plane crashing into the first tower, I got to hear their reaction to seeing the other plane come in and hit the other tower. And then that's when it sank in. It's, you know, immediately everybody realized, okay, well, this was not an accident.
Right.
And then you hear about the Pentagon. And then you heard about United 93 going down in a field in Pennsylvania. And all of a sudden, and nobody knew anything. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. And it was, you know, you could see why people would need something to try and make sense of this. I mean, these things, 9/11, the Aurora shooting, Columbine, all of these mass, you know, these mass destruction of lives.
People have that need for clarity and understanding.
Yeah. I mean, these things are the very definition of senseless tragedy.
But also with that, another example is JFK, the assassination of John F. Kennedy was 50 years ago this year.
It was, wasn't it?
Objectively, that is still not a closed case.
No.
There is still a lot of debate about what happened that day. They had a man in custody, convicted in the court of public opinion in 4 hours.
50 and years executed in the court of public opinion.
Within a weekend,
within a week, yeah.
50 years later, that is still unsettled.
Right.
So the other need that immediately gets satisfied through these hasty shortcuts is safety and security. This is when people say, all right, we're on it. We know who we're after, or right. We got the guy. Or,
and we'll make sure they never get on a plane in the United States again. And unfortunately, some of you will get caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, yeah. So those are two needs that I think that we can recognize that we have, and then we can look at how we're going about meeting them, and are we taking kind of sloppy shortcuts to get there? For me,
is that a debate that we're going to have?
No, because I think
the answer is yes. I'm sure you do too.
As far as
are we taking sloppy shortcuts?
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, I think we are. And because I caught myself doing it, and I don't just want to sit here and like pass judgment on other people. This was a process that I had to stop and think about my own thinking. On December 14th, what was I doing?
Right.
Why am I falling into this? Why am I frantically going through Facebook? Why am I flipping from one television channel to the other? And that went on. That went on for about an hour before I just shut everything off and went back to whatever I was working on the website at the time. So right. I just shut all my computer windows, turned the television off, and went back to what I was doing.
Right.
And it just felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah. But I mean, most people are driven by this need to know more about it. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they know everyone's going to be talking about it.
And you have to talk about it. Right. Yeah. So this was another thing that I identified that was kind of like gave it this extra urgency for me is this is something that happened at a school. This is a very liberty oriented issue.
Right.
So everybody might just be expected to weigh in on it at work the next day.
Right.
And they want to sound like they know what they're talking about for five or six people.
Right.
But a couple people emailed me and said, what are you going to say about this? I had nothing. I had nothing to say. I didn't know anything. I could not make sense of it. But then this other need for self-efficacy or maintaining integrity, being consistent, sounding like you knowing what you're talking about. Right. And, to meet all three of those, maybe the shortcut is just to post some meme.
Maybe. The thing that just occurred to me is that, like, what is this spell that politicians weave over the populace that, like, makes people somehow think that government – well, I mean, you know, government – first of all, what makes them think that government is a thing? That's something that's been extensively discussed. But in a situation like this where something so senseless and tragic happens that you just can't make sense of it, it will not make sense no matter how you analyze it. Why do we think – that the people running the state are able to make sense out of it any better than we are?
I would say they,
on a personal level, they can't. They, I mean, if they can, then that's just an, you know.
No, they're always the people. There's actually less chance of that happening because they're always the people who are in the position to benefit from all of these events.
Right, and also their children go to schools with armed guards.
Yeah, and this was one of the criticisms of Alex Jones is like, oh, so-and-so benefits, so they are the perpetrator. Well, you know, when it comes to something like 9/11 or this shooting happened in Connecticut, all states can benefit from it because they can increase their power, they can increase their budget, they can declare emergencies and get federal funding. So all state governments benefit from what really most directly affects one state government. All countries in the world, all large, powerful first world countries benefited from 9/11 because it was an excuse to increase power. Right. So that doesn't mean that they had formed this cabal to carry out 9/11.
Right.
As Alex Jones, he doesn't imply it was like a worldwide – well, he kind of does, but not like countries.
Isn't everything sort of a worldwide cabal, Alex Jones?
yeah, but the same people are always benefiting, so the same people are always perpetrating. Right. This is usually summed up under some nebulous term like the New World Order or the globalists.
It's just a really, he's playing a long game with this, like, ad hoc, ergo propter hoc.
Right.
After this, therefore, because this happened and afterwards these people benefit, they must have... It's a very basic logical fallacy, is it not?
Yeah, yeah. But it's all, everyone's trying to go through the same process, I think. Mm-hmm. Unless they're just like, I don't give a shit about this and I'm going to cash in on it. You know, it is, this makes me feel unsafe. This makes me feel bad. This is confusing. This is something that I need to be able to explain to myself or others. And unfortunately, what was so tragic for me is I just watched so many people, including really myself, try to in order to get those things met, to cut across this land of paranoia, judgment, and just general shittiness towards other people that is Facebook and the mainstream media. And now that was sad.
But I think it could provide some useful insight into the inner workings of somebody like Alex Jones, for example. You know, you talked about needing to feel better. Immersing yourself in this certainty that there is a group of specific evil persons behind all of these horrible things is got to be, in a way, comforting.
Yeah, because you never have to have those first 2 hours of 9/11 moment where you don't know, which is absolutely terrifying.
As soon as you hear about this thing, it's like, oh, the New World Order is at it again.
Everything can just be immediately integrated into this pre-existing model. Mm. For explaining everything. And
if you make that organization big enough and large enough in scope and powerful enough, then you can use it to explain anything.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to decide that Darth Vader is behind everything bad from now on.
But part of the problem is that not everyone is ever going to agree on Darth Vader.
That's true. There are going to be a lot of apologists for Darth Vader who will talk, you know, about his troubled youth. Mm-hmm. His legitimate objections to the methods and workings of the Jedi Order.
Mm-hmm. But there's also going to be people who blame the rebellion.
That's true.
You know, there are also going to be people who say, listen, it's nobody's fault. We live in a nonsensical universe. Yeah. We're calling a parsec, which is a distance, a measure of time.
Right.
This doesn't make any sense. But that pretty much is the arena that this happens in. Because people don't address how these things affect them, and this is just my assessment from my own experience on a personal level. Mm-hmm. They just run traumatized to this, you know, cage match of politics. And there would be so much more productivity if people wouldn't divide and conquer themselves. And I wish I could have this debate with people where I could say, let's agree. Let's shake on it that we don't want kids to be shot.
Yeah.
You know, and let's not go to the political. Let's have discussion. Let's have a discussion in this hypothetical situation where you cannot reduce the number of guns and I cannot increase the number of guns. You know, just for a thought experiment.
Yeah.
And we have to come up with some other solution that does not involve decreasing or increasing the number of guns in the United States. Let's not take this into the political.
Right.
Let's not take this into the unwinnable. Let's not take this into the world of right doing and wrongdoing.
Yeah. And we can – because otherwise we can always – either side is going to be able to dig up statistics that support their argument.
Yeah.
I could go get my source on the statistic that says more people are killed by hammers than assault rifles in the United States every year. About 100 more.
Oh, but they have a statistic for your statistic.
Exactly. Right. That's so, the thing. That's why your suggested approach is excellent. Let's make it not about guns.
I've realized statistics are just about the worst thing, right? Yeah. So because
they seem so official.
Yeah.
And you can have two sets of statistics on the same thing that say the opposite.
And I saw that while I was preparing for the Logic Saves live show on Alex Jones versus Piers Morgan. There's two completely different sets of statistics based on, you know, what agency. And statistical data, as Tony pointed out in the show, is incredibly manipulatable.
Right. Statistics is really very complicated.
Yeah. There's two kinds of people who don't trust statistics. Complete idiots, for lack of a better description.
Okay.
And people who are the complete opposite. Liberals parody this all the time. Stephen Colbert, I don't trust numbers. I don't trust books. You know, I go with my gut. And that is a real thing when people are just guided by emotion and protecting themselves emotionally, they can bat away statistics or they can bat away facts because statistics often become synonymous with facts.
Right.
But then you have just about everybody in the middle who says, oh, statistics, very official looking and sounding. I trust those because I'm scientific.
Right.
You know, and then you have people who are the opposite of the people who don't trust statistics for emotional reasons and say, well, you know, how is this data collected? Who collected this data? What is their agenda? What dog do they have in this fight? And they want some context about who gathered the statistics and why and what they're going to be used for and what the methods were. So that's what I mean when I say there's people who don't trust statistics for the wrong reasons and maybe people who don't automatically trust statistics. It doesn't mean that statistics are automatically untrustworthy. It just means they shouldn't automatically be trusted.
I sometimes try to win arguments by just making up my own statistics.
But you can do that. It's very popular.
Here's the trick. Here's the clincher. All right. You pop open Microsoft Excel. Mm-hmm. Or LibreOffice or one of the free alternatives, and you make a chart.
And you show them a chart?
Show them a chart. Because I can rattle off statistics off the top of my head. You don't know if I'm making them up or not, but I've got a chart.
Oh, yeah?
And I could even post it on the internet.
That's kind of a double-edged sword, too, because people seem to have real good bullshit detectors for statistics that they don't agree with.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've made this point a number of times recently, actually, in discussions with people. Their statistics are exhaustively researched, thoroughly vetted, and bulletproof, and yours are fake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can get lost in that forever. And I wish there was a polite way for me to say to somebody that I know I would disagree with, you know, instead of you using your imagination to come up with, you know, justifications for the existence of the current system, for the expansion of the current system, and me using my imagination to think of clever new ways to call people like you idiots, we could actually use our imaginations in a different way. We could sit at a table instead of retreating to the corners of the room where we're most comfortable and yelling at each other.
Right.
But going into the political, that reacting instead of responding, you cannot do that. The impulse is to go to that place where you can vent and nothing will ever get solved there. That's not what it's for.
So basically, when people have reactions to a scenario like this that you may find distasteful, it's best for discourse for you to bear in mind that everybody's essentially having the same reaction. This news made me feel bad. I want to feel good. And we don't all have a good toolkit for, you know, reacting to something like that. The internet is a very cynical place. Everybody's always trying to be funny and point out ironies. That's all of internet humor, is cats and people pointing out how ridiculous something is.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of it's a lot of black humor, especially when something like this happens, and that's just how some people cope.
Well put.
Well, this was very educational for me. I'm glad we had this conversation. I hope our listeners got something out of it as well.
Me too.